Hey, I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. My home group's the Way Out group. We meet Saturday nights in Roselle at Cheers Clubhouse. We have an open speaker meeting at 7 p.m. And on Sundays in Roselle Park at 5 p.m., we have a big book study at the Church of the Assumption on Chiego Place, big church over there. If you guys are AA locals, you probably know where these places are. I was sharing with you guys last week that no matter how much I have done this, and I've done this a lot, trying my best to carry the AA message in AA to facilities, other places, speaking commitments, I always get a little nervous. And tonight I'm like extra nervous, but in a different way, because I just had to take my son for like a travel basketball tryout, and I think I'm more nervous than he was. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm watching him, and it's funny the way that goes. And my sponsor told me, like, you know, you hear AA shares, people share their story a lot in AA, and he always said to me, as you have this experience and continue to stay sober through God and the 12 steps, you should make sure you share with people what AA has done for you today. Not 6 years ago when you were getting sober, not your story from 10, 20 years ago. And I got done, like, I'm a dad today. And I wasn't really, I was in name only when I first walked into an AA meeting. Was I a dad or was I a stepfather? I wasn't a present person in my kids' lives. And I wasn't loving or caring. And I demanded love and respect, and I didn't give it. And I would sit around, like, I just got done, like, I'm coaching two basketball teams for my son. And it's been a real commitment. Did this thing go out, or is that just me?
Yeah, I'm going to change the battery.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I can emote if
you
want, you know.
You're projecting, but...
Whatever. So what I'll... Like, you know, you ever been like, you're drinking, and you sit at the bar, or you're watching the game with your buddies, and all you talk about is like the stuff that you're going to do. Or the stuff you used to do, right? But you're doing nothing right now. Or you're watching, like, NFL players saying, you know what, if that was me, I would have scored a touchdown. Right? I used to go with my stepson. He's old, because he's 10 years older than my son, right? And he played basketball, and I would show up for him, and I would try. I mean, I was often under the influence in the stands or whatever else. And I would always say, like, I would know how to coach these kids, right? One day I'm going to be the coach, or I know better. And I never did that, because that's the life that I lived. I was lazy, I was judgmental, I didn't challenge myself, and I didn't look for ways that I could be present and involved in my family's life, and my kids, and that's not who I am today. You know, and I have sobriety in AA to thank for that. And that's the truth, you know, and when I think about, like, I don't know if it, sometimes I feel like you're preaching to the choir when you do a big book study. Like, there are a lot of people here that love the big book and got sober through the big book. And then there are some people who maybe that's not really their thing here in AA. Some people are new. And when I was first coming in, I just thought I had to attend meetings, and it didn't really work out for me. It's probably not a coincidence, because AA's program for recovery is the 12 steps. And nowhere in the 12 steps does it say, like, make one meeting a day, you'll stay sober for the rest of your life. Because when the 12 steps were written, they didn't have meetings every day. They had a program of action that you had to take. Now, this is not to say attending AA meetings isn't vital to recovery and you have to be part of something, but that's what I thought it was, and it didn't work out. And then I would hear some guys, like, who would talk about the big book, or have a big book meeting, or they sponsor people, and I would think those guys were a little weird. And, like, if you quoted the big book, or you talked about you had big book recovery, my thought was, like, what's up with you, dude? You don't have any thoughts of your own? You just got to quote a book? And what I know today is, like, I have big book recovery, and everything I refer to, like, if it isn't sound with what's in here, then you guys should just ignore me. I need to refer to this book because I have so many ideas of my own that aren't that good, that are opinionated, that are judgmental, that are things I heard somewhere that sound good. But if it's not in here, then it's just some ideas and some thoughts and some opinions that I have, and that might not be helpful to somebody. And it's really important. And if you guys weren't here last week, I'm going to do this again. So from the beginning of the doctor's opinion to page 103 is the 12 steps laid out in the big book. So I think it's 111 pages, right? So that's step one, which I'm going to talk about with you guys, and I've started to step 12, working with others. And step one is from the doctor's opinion to page 44. So that's about 52 pages. So it's 52 pages out of 111. So it's something like 46% of the 12 steps as they're outlined in the big book are all step one. Right? So here's the whole program. Here's step one. Pretty important stuff. Really important stuff. Like steps six and seven are two paragraphs. You know? They're like freebies. Not really, but... I'm gonna do some here. If you guys could go to page 52, if you're a big book person, you know page 52, right? Mark, what's on page 52?
Bedevilments.
Okay, so if you're a big book person, you know page 52, right? They're the bedevilments, right? And if you're just learning this and you're going to big book meetings, you're going to hear this. And write down, one, two, second full paragraph. What this outlines, I'm going to read this to you guys, is the spiritual malady of alcoholism. What goes on the inside spiritually for the alcoholic, right? We had to ask ourselves, we're going to write down here, we were having trouble, right? Second full paragraph, second sentence, it says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we... And it goes on. There's a bigger context to it. But when you look at those things that are outlined there, right? A person having trouble with personal relationships, an out of control emotional nature, a prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living, a feeling of uselessness, fearful, unhappy, and couldn't be a real help to other people. I could identify with that 1,100,000,000%. I promise everybody in here could relate to those ideas right there and those feelings in some way. The thing about it is this. In and of itself, that's not alcoholism. And a lot of people present alcoholism as a spiritual malady, right? Like, they live in page 52, and here's the problem with that. Every single person in the world has felt these ways at some point in their life. For 5 minutes, or for their whole life, they felt this way. Because it's not alcoholism, it's the human condition. To feel these ways is anybody in the world can feel these ways. What makes me alcoholic is when I'm sick and I feel this way, my idea is I should have a drink and I'll feel better. And when I start drinking, what we started talking last week is I have this physical allergy to alcohol where I cannot guarantee you if and when I'm going to stop. And then when I realize drinking is a really bad idea because I have no control once I start drinking and I'm going to stop, I have a brain that says, it wasn't that bad. I could do it again. Forget about it, you lost your job, or you went to rehab, or you're getting divorced. You can drink like a normal person. That's what my brain says, right? Like, my mom feels this way sometimes, and you know what she does? She doesn't drink. She sneaks a cigarette and eats, like, brownies when she gets spiritually sick. But if I told her, you're alcoholic, if you feel this way, she would come to AA and be like, hey, when I feel this way, I don't drink. I sneak a cigarette and I act passive-aggressive, right? In and of itself, it's not alcoholism. And it's important because you can listen to a lot of people in AA, circuit speakers, and all kinds of... And they'll share stories with you, and they'll never even talk about drinking. And there's a lot of talk about drinking in these first paragraphs for a reason. Because you can't be alcoholic if you don't drink alcohol. And sometimes that gets a little twisted in here. So where we were was, I'm on XXX in the doctor's opinion. So, the top of the page where it says, these men were not drinking to escape. So I don't know if you guys, if I have the same edition as you guys. So these men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. So I'll just backtrack from last week. It's really an important thing. What they're saying is the continuous drinking of the alcoholic. There could be a reason you start drinking, but I could never understand it. Like, I would start drinking and it would just get away from me. Like, I could start drinking because I was depressed. Like, I broke up with a chick and I want to escape, right? But my continuous drinking was not because the whole time I was like, oh man, my heart's broken. Something happens when I put alcohol in my body that I can't guarantee you if and when I'm going to stop. I just can't. And it's like, have you ever heard the term people say, like, alcoholics overshoot the mark when they start drinking? You know, like, I try to explain to people, it's sort of like, if you're ever really thirsty, it's like a hot day, maybe you're out working in the sun, you're sweating or whatever, and there's a case of water there, and you're super thirsty. You might drink a bottle of water. You might say, man, I'm going to drink two bottles of water. But you've never said, I'm really thirsty, it's a hot day, drank a bottle of water, and then continue to drink the whole case of water. I have done that with alcohol. I have said, like, I want one or two to take the edge off, and then, case is gone, and it wasn't my plan. That's a different reaction, and not everybody in the world has that reaction once they start drinking, right? There are many situations which arise of the phenomenon of craving. So that's what they talk about, and I found that confusing initially, because the idea is my body craves alcohol once I put alcohol on my body. Because my mind tells me the word craving is actually for something that's not already in my body. Like right now, I'm craving pizza. It isn't because I just ate a slice of pizza. It's because I'm thinking about eating some pizza, right? Alcohol, it's a little different, so it could be confusing. Which caused men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. The classification of alcoholics seems most difficult and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths who are mostly unstable. We're familiar with this type. They're always going on the wagon for keeps. They're over-remorseful and make many resolutions but never a decision. There's a type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. There is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he could take a drink without danger. There is the manic depressive type who is perhaps the least understood by his friends, about whom a whole chapter could be written. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. That last paragraph's funny because I always figured, like, Bill Wilson was a salesman, so he put stuff in this book to sell the program, and I think to make himself look good sometimes, right? Like, if you wrote the book, you'd say, hey, I'm alcoholic, but I'm often able, intelligent, and friendly. But I think what happens is a lot of times the stories that we share, that we hear, we think to be alcoholic, you've had to end up in a hospital or a jail or lost everything in your life. And that's not the description of the alcoholic in our big book. It's about what happens when you drink and when you don't drink. Because I have personally tried to help and been around guys living in homeless shelters who have not hit bottom. Right? Their life from the outside looking in looks like, hey, you should have had enough by now, but they haven't. And I've met people who were in, like, nice homes with families, but they just could not control their drinking. And they had enough. So the description of the alcoholic, it's an inside job. It's not what it looks like on the outside, you know? All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. Which is funny, because my experience, personally, is I've taken medication that's supposed to help with alcohol cravings. It didn't work. I've had more than one medical professional tell me, I'll give you this and I'll give you that, and blah, 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 but you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the only thing that works. You know, that's my experience. And so the allergy thing is like this, and this is how I would explain it to you guys. Again, that's another thing that sounds funny, to say I'm allergic to alcohol, phenomenon of craving. The words are a little antiquated. This was written almost 100 years ago by a guy who was educated, and people who were educated at the turn of the century, right? So it's a little removed from how we speak today or the words that we use. But an allergy is an abnormal reaction to something. That's all it is, right? So my abnormal reaction with alcohol is, if I put alcohol in my body, sometimes alcohol says to me, hey, I know you only want to have one, but we're going to have 100. You're long for the ride, right? But if anybody here, does anybody here have a physical allergy to something? If it's real personal, you don't have to share it with me, but...
Pollen.
Let's see. Where's pollen? Like, is it on certain trees or...
In a garden on flowers.
A garden, flowers, right, okay. What's your name?
Anita.
So, Anita, when you get close to pollen, what happens?
I get stuffy nose, sneezing, and coughing.
Right. So when I drink alcohol, I can't guarantee you when enough is enough. My body says, I know you might, right? I'm going to have one, but we're going to end up having some more. And that's my allergic reaction to alcohol. That's the reaction that's being described here. You have an allergic reaction to pollen, which gives you physical symptoms, right? Sneeze, right? You ever get a rash?
Yes.
Right. It's probably pretty uncomfortable. So what's your solution to your allergy to pollen?
Just stay away from it.
Stay away, right? So, I recognized a long time ago that when I drink alcohol, it doesn't work out well. And I tell myself, just stay away. Right? My stepson has a really bad allergy to tree nuts. So it's worse than peanuts. He's been in the hospital before. He ate a walnut cookie once by mistake and almost died. His whole face, it gets real big. His ears, his nose, his throat closes. He has an EpiPen. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. So what does he do? He does what Anita does. He reads labels when he eats something. If he goes out to eat, he tells them, I have a nut allergy. Please don't give me anything with sesame seeds, walnuts, anything like that. He looks at the food before he eats it. And he'll be good for the rest of his life outside of an accident. He'll avoid the allergy to tree nuts. If you stay diligent, you'll avoid your allergy to pollen. You guys would be screwed if you woke up one day and your brain said, I think I got this pollen thing beat. If my stepson said, you know what, I know it was bad last time I ended up in the hospital, but I really want a sesame seed bagel with cream cheese on it. And that's the problem, ultimately, that we have, because we could talk all day long about what a bad idea it is to drink. And if you've had the experience of putting alcohol in your body and it not being your plan to get drunk, and then you wake up drunk hours or days later, you qualify to have the physical allergy to alcohol. The real issue rests in the mind. You know, I have a mind, and real alcoholics have a mind that says it wasn't that bad last time. Maybe I can do it differently. Like what the doctor talked about. Everybody plans various different ways of drinking. You're going to change your environment. You're going to do different things. We'll go on to read some other things. Like maybe if I just drink like a gentleman, right? Like I've been drinking hard liquor. Maybe I should just drink red wine. Then before you know it, I have a couple glasses of red wine. I got to go somewhere. I take a soda bottle and I fill it half up with red wine and soda and I'm driving somewhere. I can't explain these things, right? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to skip the doc's opinion. So here's the other thing I'm going to do. I don't mean this to be sacrilegious. I'm not really going to read Bill's story with you guys. Who here has had an experience with Bill's story? Like you've read it, you understand it, and you might just raise a hand. Okay. Anybody here like, nah, I know about it. Maybe I read it. I've never read it before, right? No? You guys don't want to play along with me? All right. Point being, right, is no matter what your experience is, what I'll offer to you guys, and my sponsor told me this, he said, your AA share should sound a little something like Bill's story. Because if you look at it, maybe if you want to read it again or for the first time from the perspective of what is he really sharing, and does it sound like AA shares you've heard? A lot of times you hear AA shares and it's like, I was born in 1980 and went to school here and I lived there and I got cut from the baseball team and then I got drunk at a party and then da da. Like Bill Wilson's story starts when he's 20-something years old and it's basically 17 pages of him talking about his drinking and his alcoholism and then at the end how he got better. And there's really no, he doesn't really share many feelings in there. If you really look at it, he talks about the demoralization that he feels from drinking and the hopelessness. But he doesn't talk about how resentful he was or how his parents didn't love him enough or anything like that. He talks about his drinking, and what he talks about is step one, powerlessness. He doesn't have the power of control, which is physical, and allergy, and he doesn't have the power of choice, which is the mind. You know, I think I can choose when I can drink. And I learned that without God in the 12 steps, the choice that will always come into my head is, I can drink again. I can do it differently this time. But it wasn't that bad last time. You know? And so what I'm gonna jump forward to, there is a solution. Actually, you know, I'll share something with you guys. Actually, Bill's story, page 13, if you don't mind. So when I talked to you guys at the beginning and I pointed out how like there's this spiritual malady that alcoholics suffer from, but it's pretty much a general universal malady that anybody could. So drinking and drinking alcoholically is what makes you alcoholic. I think it's for a purpose because, you know, all we have here is identification. So, like, I saw my man Sleeveless Eddie outside. I haven't seen him in a while. And it makes me think, when I first came to AA, so here's the funny thing that happened. I came to AA, my first group was here in Westfield, and it didn't work out. I wasn't done. I'd make meetings. I didn't really pay attention. But I listened to people. You know, and sometimes, you know, you guys ever heard somebody say like, hey, I'm not going to bore you with my drunk a lot. Like, we all know how to drink. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really a short-sighted thing to say. Like, Bill Wilson talked about his drinking for 17 pages. Thank God he did. That's how people identify. You know? And what happened was, I couldn't stay sober. I got sober. And then I got sober in a big book group, and I did all this great 12-step stuff, and I started saying, you know what? Those guys that I met when I first came into AA, they weren't good AA members. They didn't know what they were doing. And where I am now, we got to figure it out, and I got to figure it out. And luckily, I don't feel that way today, because what I know for a fact is, like, when I first came into AA, I'd see Eddie, I'd go to those meetings. I can remember the men in those meetings talking about how they drank. And it was the first light bulb moment for me to be like, oh, crap. Maybe I belong here. Because I thought everybody hid bottles around the house. Right? Like, this was, you know, like, it wasn't just unique to me, or it wasn't that big of a deal, or my wife was blowing it way out of proportion, right? Like, I used to drink clear Bacardi like it was my job, and I got, like, I had this system where I would put a handle on the counter, and I would drink about half of it, because I was constantly drinking, but I didn't want my wife to know how much I was drinking. So once it got like halfway, I'd always have another bottle somewhere else in my trunk, in the basement. I would take that bottle, I would put it in water bottles, because it's clear, so no one would ever know, right? No one would ever know. And then the bottle that was there, I would fill up with water. But here's the thing, she'd know and see me drinking all day long, but somehow the bottle on the counter would never change the level, right? And then I would do things like, if it was booze, because I'd have other water bottles, say, in my car that were actually water, I'd rip the label. This is a foolproof program here, right? If the label's ripped, it's Bacardi. If the label's on it, it's water. But then what happens, right? I go with my stepson one day, maybe he's 10 years old, I don't know. I go to a pizzeria. Hey, Mike, man, sit in the car. I'll go grab the pizza. I go in the pizzeria. There's a line. I'm in there for a couple minutes. He comes running in the pizzeria. Adam. I'm like, what's up, man? Like, he's all worked up. And he's like, I just went to drink the water bottle in your car, and it tastes like alcohol, like that, right? In front of all these people in the pizzeria. And I'm looking at him like, how does this kid know my name, right? Like, get out of here. And then I remember I got in the car, and I didn't know how to explain it to him. Like, I was like, dude, just go in the car. I'll be out in a minute. You know, and I got in the car, and I didn't know how to explain it to him. I couldn't think of a lie. Okay. And I told him, I was like, you know, my boss gave me a bottle of liquor at work, Mike, and I dropped it. I broke the top of it, but I didn't want to waste the whole bottle, so I poured it off into a water bottle. And he was like, oh, okay. So I lied to him. And then I doubled down, like alcoholics do. I said, do me a favor, don't tell your mom about this. Right? So not only did I lie to him, I was teaching him to lie to his mother. Right? If you're alcoholic, if you've ever done anything like that, you get 100% what I'm talking about. Right? That's identification. That's why it's really important to talk to people about your drinking. That's why Bill Wilson did. Because everybody in here, if you're assuming you have a drinking problem, right? Raise your hand if you have no other problem in your life other than a drinking problem. Impossible. Everybody has all kinds of problems, right? But what brings us here is a common problem and trying to find a common solution, right? You could have a drug problem, a gambling problem, a sex problem, right? You could have a mental health issue. You could just be a jerk. You know, it could be a lot of different things that could bring you here, right? But there's a common solution for a common problem. And what's cool is, and I found this to be true, on page 13 it says, you know, I found it before, and now I missed it. Down, 1, 2, 3, 4. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, only asking for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive. but that would be in great measure. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Like, I found that because alcohol brought me here, and I suffered from alcoholism, and I had enough, right? And I hit bottom. And we're going to talk about what bottom is because it's outlined here. A lot of other problems in my life have straightened out. Like, through the 12 steps and trying to practice this program every day, I don't lie too much anymore. I don't cheat. You know, I don't rob people. I'm not an abusive person anymore. I wake up for work and I try my best to show up and do my best. You know, those were all problems before that weren't really related to alcohol, but because I suffered from alcoholism and practiced this program, a lot of other things have straightened out. Pretty cool stuff, right? Page 17, there is a solution. We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupants are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feeling of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go on our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in and of itself will never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree upon, which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So really what he's saying is, like, imagine, you know, that shipwreck moment, like whether you're real rich at the captain's table or you're stuffing coal in the oven, if you're alcoholic, we have something in common, right? And that is a cool bond, but a cooler bond. My group is called The Way Out, and it's because it says, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. And the thing that, where that's really found, is we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. That when we take action together to help to stay sober and help others get sober through the 12 steps, that's the cement. Like, that's the thing that really binds us. Because we could, like, I have people in AA that, because I've gone on commitments with them, or people that I've tried to help, there's a connection with those people that is very strong and deep for me because we've taken that action together, right? An illness, page 18, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. Real quick, I tell people this all the time. You hear it all the time. People call alcoholism a disease in AA. Nowhere in the big book is it referred to as a disease. And I only point that out because getting sober is very confusing. And disease is a medical and a scientific term. And I was trying to find it before. Bill Wilson did a talk in the 1940s to some medical society, and he actually said he specifically did not want to refer to alcoholism as a disease because he didn't want to get into some kind of debate with medical or scientific people because we're something different. And I think it's important because sometimes people use that term disease in a general way, right? And they're not talking about alcoholism. They're just talking about suffering. Food for thought. Take it or leave it. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. I remember I said this. I don't know if anybody else has ever said this or you've ever heard this. Like, probably to my ex-wife, like, I have a disease, right? If I had cancer, you wouldn't be mad at me. Again, anybody ever try one of those? Anybody ever try something like that? You're right. And it's absolutely true, right? But what I could equate it to is if you had cancer and someone brought you to chemotherapy and you said, I'm not going to take the treatment, people would be pretty upset with you, I'm sure, right? So if I'm alcoholic and somebody brings me to AA or to rehab or somewhere to recover and I can't recover, people are going to be pretty upset with you. So it's really no different. There is a way out of the deal we have. The question is, are you able or willing to do it at any given time? You know. We hope that this volume will inform and comfort those who are or may have been affected. There are many. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss the situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, friends, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. Here's your big book lesson for the day. If you don't know this, anything in italics means it's really important, because when they wrote the big book, it literally cost more to print a book. Italic print costs more than regular print. So if it's in italics, it means they paid more money to put it in there, so you better pay attention. But the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So the proof is in the pudding. People, up to this point, this is not a sales pitch. Nothing in like human history has been more successful at helping people with a drinking problem than Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of things have been tried. Millions of people's lives have gotten better as a result of AA. That's a fact. I don't have any studies or any numbers, but I know it's true. I know it's true. And it's because it's one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. Not someone who doesn't have my problem telling me what to do. Because that never works. It has never worked once. Ever. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole department shouts as a new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions which we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. I'm going to skip that. Don't worry about me. I like doing this. Okay. Page 20. You may have already asked yourself, why is it that all of us became so very ill from drinking? Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you're an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking. So this is the key word. Key words, excuse me. What do I have to do? My sponsor told me early on, because he saw me trying to tell everybody what to do and sponsor the world, and he said, hey Adam, if somebody doesn't ask you for help or what you think, shut the hell up. You know? And it's true, because I know, like, the guys that suffer that I come across, if they have to come in and out and suffer, they're actually more likely to ask the guy who's just sort of been supportive or been there for help when they're ready than the guy who's been in their face, like, because you're not doing this and you're not... That's the last guy they want to come back and ask for help, you know? I had a guy that I just had this conversation, and it broke my heart. When I was getting sober 6 years ago, I was running around with this guy for the first couple months, and we got really tight. Then I found out he was just lying the whole time. I thought he was doing the same thing as me, and he wasn't. And he's been ripping and running since. And, you know, truthfully, I don't even think alcohol is his problem. But that's a story for another day. But he's going to die. And I've wanted to talk to him for the better part of 6 years to, like, tell him what to do. And the other day he called me and finally said, what do you think I should do? So what I've learned is, because it's in the big book and it's my experience, up until that question is asked, there's a much bigger chance what I'm going to say is going to fall on deaf ears. You know? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done before going into detailed discussion. It may be well to summarize some points as we see them. How many times people have said to us, so you might be alcoholic if you can relate to what I'm about to read, if anybody's ever said this to you. I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't you? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow just can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl, I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. When I was about 30, I was drinking very heavily, between 30 and 35, I don't know. And I went to the doctor, and I had this pain in my back. I still have it. Turns out I have some back problem. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was from falling down the stairs in college drunk. Really think that's what it was, but I don't know. And I went, and I told the doctor, and all this, and I was concerned I had an internal problem. So he said, he gave me a CAT scan, or I don't know what he did, some kind of scan. I came back, and it was like a family doctor, so my wife went there too. And he was like, I don't see any major issue, but your liver is like twice the size it should probably be. And my first thought, swear to God, was, I hope he doesn't tell my wife. It was not, oh man, I gotta stop drinking. It was, I hope he doesn't tell my wife. And then I told him, I had a long weekend drinking with my buddies. Total lie, you know? I was just drinking every day. You know what I mean? Now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we have heard here all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. So what that really means is, if you think these are solutions to alcoholism, you don't understand alcoholism as we understand it in AA. If you think you can say to somebody, dude, you should stop, you're married to a really good girl, or you're going to kill yourself because you have health problems, and that in and of itself will keep somebody from drinking, then they don't even need to come to an AA meeting. They could just do it all on their own. So this is what really blew my mind. It's like a page 20 moment. I didn't know this until it was time for me to know it, right? Down at the bottom, it says, I would hear people say, like, I'm Adam and I'm a real alcoholic. And I'd be like, what a jerk. You know, like, you got to make yourself special. It's sort of like, you know, you hear somebody, they're like, I'm Jim-coholic. Like, somebody's got to do something funny to stand out in the crowd. And I didn't know that they were referring to something that is in the big book. Like, there's a definition from what you would call a real alcoholic or a moderate drinker or a hard drinker. Like, there are different levels of drinking problem that you could have according to our program, right? So we do questions at the end, so keep that thought, or I'll remember it for you. So it says moderate drinkers have a little trouble in giving up liquor entirely. If they've given a good reason for it, they could take it or leave it alone. So think about anybody in your life that you've seen maybe have a martini or a couple beers, but you know for damn sure they don't have a drinking problem. Like if somebody told them, you know, you could never have another alcoholic drink again, or you're going to lose your wife and your kid and your job, they would never drink again. They wouldn't even think about it twice, right? Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have had the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. This is a serious description. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. So seemingly a hard drinker looks a whole lot like an alcoholic. Like this is a guy who has trouble stopping, who has to go like get help medically. They may need medical attention. So what this could look like, I've been in rehab myself. I try to, as often as I can, carry the AA message to treatment facilities. There are a lot of people that end up in rehabs because they had a bad run or a bad weekend or they got a DUI, and based off the experience of sitting in a rehab, they can walk out of there and off sheer willpower never ever drink, or they can moderate drinking for the rest of their lives. That's the truth, right? It's the story of a hard drinker. And the only reason I say that is because the next paragraph, so what does it say? But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And it's important to say this too. It says he may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. There is a thought amongst people, I think in AA or in general, that to be alcoholic means you have to drink every single day, all day long. And that's not what the big book says. It's just once you start drinking, how does it go? How does it go? Right? Because we probably all know binge drinkers, like people that are real cool for months at a time, and then they take a drink, and then you don't see them for 2 weeks. Then they come back, because I'm never going to do it again. And then 3 months later, right, they end up in an airport in Ohio or something. Here is the fellow who has been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He's always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly, even dangerously antisocial. This sentence here, it wasn't the sentence that blew my mind, it was that I was this guy, right? I had lived the experience, and then it was pointed out to me by my sponsor. He has a positive genius for getting tight, meaning drunk, at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. So, if you're not an alcoholic, you will never, ever, ever, ever say, like, it's lunchtime, I'm going to have a beer with the guys and go back to work, have one beer, and then it's 4 days later and you didn't go back to work and, you know, you're in an airport in Missouri, right? Who knows, right? That'll never, ever happen to a moderate drinker. Will never happen. How does alcoholics? And I remember my sponsor, when he was trying to describe alcoholism through his experience, talked about getting real drunk at his wedding, and he had asked me if I ever had an experience like that. And I think I shared some stuff with you guys last week, but I had had multiple instances in my life where I had like a really good reason not to get drunk. And like when I was getting engaged, I tell you guys about that, Mark. I was engaged and I was getting married, and my fiance at the time was like, I will allow you to have a bachelor party, right? Yeah. Which I was psyched about. I tell you about that, Rick?
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, I just real quick, I mean, you already know how this story ends, but I really meant, like, she was like, you can go, but you have to be back tomorrow at noon. Like, I'm giving you basically a 24-hour window. And I was so happy she was allowing me to leave the house for this event. I was like, I will be back tomorrow by noon. I was back 3 days later. And it was not my plan, right? And that was a really important engagement to be kept. Like, I was getting married in a couple weeks. You know, I know what it is to not be able to drive my wife to the hospital because I was too drunk, and that wasn't my plan. You know, it doesn't happen to normal people, right? It doesn't happen, I should say normal people, it doesn't happen to people who have a normal relationship with alcohol. Never will happen, right? Like, I don't know. If you, like, I know for me, right? Like, I'll take my ex-wife out, and she'll be like, I'm going to have a martini. And she'll have one martini. And always. Maybe she'll order a second one. And what does she do? She leaves half of it in the glass. And in my mind, I'm like, this is alcohol abuse right here. Not what I do, what you do. You leave it. Not only that, half that martini costs about $11.50, the way this place charges, right? She doesn't know what that experience is. That, like, I'm going to have one at most might be 1.5, like, because she's not alcoholic. She can safely put alcohol in her body, you know. And should it ever be imperative to her, right, to stop drinking based on, like, losing a job or her kids or things like that, she would do it. You know, she would do it. I can't make that decision, right? Here we go. We got a couple minutes. Page 24. Again, italics. So I'm going to leave you guys with this and we're going to pick up on it next week. But there is a boatload of things that are said every and all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous that are very well intentioned and absolutely 100% not based in anything in this book. As a matter of fact, some of it is the exact opposite of what's being said in here and the description of what alcoholism really is. If I have the mental obsession to drink, this is what it looks like. Italics, page 24, the fact. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against that first drink. So when someone tells you, right, play the tape back. Anybody ever heard that? Doesn't work if you're really alcoholic. Because you at some point the tape will run out. And without God in the 12 steps, your mind will say, drink's a good idea. And why do I know that? Because I've experienced it, and because our program tells us right here, I'm without choice. I cannot, at certain times, bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. My first sponsor in AA are like people will tell you things, right? The most important relationship I have today to stay sober is my relationship with God through the 12 steps. That's the truth. I'm not just saying that because Mark asked me to speak here. But that's the truth. Maybe if you're struggling, you call somebody, but you can only make so many phone calls if you're still suffering before you just don't make a phone call. And when I was early on and I was struggling, I was like, screw this. Anybody ever have that moment? You get a case of the efforts? Drove to the liquor store. Swear to God. Sit outside the liquor store, I get a call from my sponsor. Get on the phone, tell him I'm struggling, I'm thinking about drinking. I'm sure everything I said back then, it's my boss's fault, my wife's fault, the lawnmower's broken, everything under the sun. No, never me, right? He talked me, he gave a pep talk, just don't do it, you're good, come to the meeting, we'll talk later. I said, yeah, that sounds great. I got off the phone with him, and guess what I did? Went in the liquor store and I got drunk. Because it's not the first drink, it's the thought of the first drink that's my problem. If I continue to think about drinking, I'll only be able to outrun that thought before it catches up with me at some point. And that is the experience of the alcoholic. Truly, and if you don't believe me, I'm not saying this to be a jerk. Maybe you're not alcoholic, or you have to find out the hard way. And that is the truth, because the solution is God in the 12 steps. Not every single time I think I want to drink, I have to think this thing through. Because at some point, the thoughts will not be strong enough. Because if I could do that, why in the world would I need a higher power? I'd be my own higher power. I'd just say, you know what, you want to drink, Adam, but just don't drink. Right? Like, just don't go by the pond. That's all I got for tonight. Thanks, guys.